This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 107 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. The most polarizing film versus numbers running back in this draft class is probably Alvin Kamara, a committee back for 2 years at Tennessee who is entering the draft after his junior season. Because he wasn't the lead dog in his backfield, he saw just 19.92% of the team's touches this past year, averaging fewer than 10 attempts per game. Meanwhile, many are comparing him to Jamaal Charles, and some think that he's a first-round value. It's entirely possible that he becomes the next hyper-efficient, higher-volume runner at the NFL level, and he'd also become an exception to the rule. As noted above, none of the backs in the sample saw a rushing attempt market share lower than 21.28%. That includes Jamaal Charles, who had a 47.87% attempt share during his last season at Texas. That's a piece of an article that I wrote on NumberFire last year profiling which draft hopeful running backs produced like studs when they were in college. And that was the start of me talking about my concerns with Alvin Kamara as we approached the NFL draft. Soon after that article, I wrote a column called "Alvin Kamara Will Have to Be an Outlier to Live Up to the Hype." In it, I basically talk through his volume concerns. If Kamara were to be an elite talent at the NFL level, he'd essentially have the lowest final college season attempt share that we've seen from a successful running back in the NFL. Why am I bringing this up? Well, accountability is important. Before Alvin Kamara was drafted by the Saints, I had real concerns about him. Hiding from that would be dishonest. But with draft season here, I've been taking some heat from emailers and folks on Twitter about this Kamara take. Because if we were to look at it from only a right or wrong perspective, I was wrong. Like I said, I think being held accountable as a forecaster and analyst is absolutely fine. It's important, actually. Here's how the Alvin Kamara outlier story that I wrote concluded. It said, "To be perfectly honest, Kamara is going to be an exciting player at the NFL level. If teams were drafting him in the third round rather than the rumored first, then sure, why not? His measurables are strong, and he has a lot of upside as a receiving threat out of the backfield. But a first-round selection? To live up to that sort of expectation, he's going to have to be a legitimate outlier. Or land in the perfect spot, like New Orleans. Because NFL backs just don't become great with this type of college production." A player that people should crap on me for is Jeremy McNichols. I loved McNichols coming out, and he didn't even make the team that drafted him. I whiffed massively hard on Jeremy McNichols. But I actually look back at my Kamara evaluation, and I feel pretty damn good about it. I even talked about him going to New Orleans. And even when he was actually drafted by the Saints, I tweeted, "Literally the perfect spot for Kamara, a guy who wasn't going to carry a significant load at the NFL level. He'll do crazy things in New Orleans." Please, please don't take this as me trying to take the W for Alvin Kamara. I'm not really someone who counts wins and losses with evaluation like that, because people will often skew their own results to look better, and I'll let you guys decide if I'm helping you or not. You don't need me telling you what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. You'll stop listening to me if I'm doing a bad job. I'm bringing this up because of the misinterpretation piece. When I'm evaluating prospects via numbers, I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying that because of these concerns, we should avoid these players. If you listened to the show last week, Calvin Ridley, as you know, didn't pop in my model as much as he's popped for draft evaluators. That doesn't mean that I absolutely hate Calvin Ridley. This is a game of probability, guys. To me, and without knowing combine results in his landing spot, so this is premature, but Calvin Ridley will have a tougher time being an elite talent to me than other evaluators. Some of you might hate that. Some of you probably get tired that I take a probability-driven stance with my player evaluation. I know that's not the way that a lot of people do things. I know this industry. I know how people think, and I know how people react, and I know how people write and talk about things. But I'm not going to be an analyst that I'm not. The entire point of this podcast is to take what's in my head and share it in the most concise, presentable way possible. And all of this brings me to today's show on running back prospects. As I said at the top, I did a study last year that looked at successful NFL running backs and compared their shared production traits in college to the incoming rookie class. I looked at usage, rushing production, receiving production, and scoring, and found that 7 running backs had complete NFL stud profiles entering last year's draft. Last season, those backs were Leonard Fournette, Aaron Jones, Matt Days, Dalvin Cook, Jeremy McNichols, Christian McCaffrey, and Kareem Hunt. Alvin Kamara did not make the cut. Overall, though, I kind of love those results. They've been pretty fruitful. Aaron Jones was a hyper-effective back in Green Bay, and Kareem Hunt broke out in Kansas City. And then Cook, McCaffrey, and Fournette obviously did their thing as well. So I did the same study this year, but I defined success a little differently. I wanted to connect everything to fantasy football, so I looked at running backs since 2011 who have had at least two seasons while averaging 13 or more PPR points per game. Why 13? Well, it's somewhat subjective, but it captured players who finish as RB1s and RB2s. When filtering out players who didn't play at FBS schools, that left our NFL stud sample to 24 running backs. So the study looked at these 24 running backs in their final season college profiles as long as they played at least six games to see how they compared to the incoming rookie class, which is defined by non-fullbacks who were invited to the NFL Combine. Yes, fullbacks are people too, but we don't want fullback numbers skewing any results. And also, if a player didn't hit that six-game mark, I used their previous season numbers. When you look at the side-by-side of the two groups' averages, naturally, the NFL stud group, so the 24 NFL studs who hit that 13-point PPR game mark, they performed far better during their final college season than the combine invites. Because, as you guys know, and I talked about this last week, players who do well in the NFL generally did well in college. Just as an example, the stud group averaged over 58% of their own team's rushing production during their final season, whereas the combine group share of team's rushing production was under 43%. For the study, I broke things down similarly to last year. I looked at usage, rushing production, receiving production, and overall scoring production. So let's walk through each category to see where red flags exist among this year's prospects. And we'll start with usage, one of the main aspects that scared me off of Kamara before the draft last season. Among our NFL stud sample, the average attempt share during these 24 running backs' final season in college was 48.52%. That includes Adrian Peterson and Todd Gurley, who didn't play a full season. For this year's class, the share was about 12 percentage points lower at 36.66%. Only four running backs in the NFL sample averaged fewer than 15 attempts per game during their final collegiate seasons. And only two of them, if you remove Todd Gurley and Adrian Peterson, who again, didn't come close to playing full seasons, but only two of them, Mark Ingram and Arian Foster, had attempt shares south of 35%. There were a handful of backs in this year's class that saw that low of an attempt share. But the two that I want to talk about are Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, who shared the same backfield. This is another reason that I'll never let numbers say everything about a player when I'm evaluating them. Offensive situations matter, and that includes the players that you're sharing the same backfield with. When a running back isn't seeing a ton of touches in a shared backfield with an objectively average running back, it's a red flag. Because if he can't beat out a bad teammate, what confidence should we have in him beating out a bad teammate in the NFL? With Chubb and Michelle, you've got two players who aren't going to jump off the page with their numbers because they did share a backfield. But they're also high-end prospects. So it would be ridiculous for me to sit here and be overly concerned about Chubb's 33% attempt share and Michelle's 23% share when we know why that was the case. We know why they had that low of an attempt share. For someone like Alvin Kamara last year, it wasn't necessarily so clear-cut. This is a pretty perfect example about my feelings with numbers and draft evaluation. No one should pretend numbers will give you all the answers because context is always needed, but it does help find inefficiencies. For instance, if you're super high on Kalen Ballage and not DeMario Richard, you've got to investigate that further. Both were teammates this past year and for all years at Arizona State, but Richard outproduced Ballage each year throughout college. That's a concern if you're into Ballage. Though it's true, you might like Richard too, similar to the Georgia situation. Now naturally, any concerns with volume will lead to some concerns with rushing production because the two are tied closely together. Without volume, it's tough to be efficient enough for true rushing production. Within the 24-player NFL sample of stud running backs, seven of them failed to reach a 50% rushing yard share during their final season, but two of those were, again, Todd Gurley and Adrian Peterson, who didn't play full seasons. Keep in mind, the average among the NFL group was over 58%. Two backs that I want to point out who failed to reach 50% are Darius Geis and Kerryon Johnson. We'll start with Geis, who's one of the premier backs in this year's class. In 2017, he had a 46.35% rushing yard share, which was an above average mark for the class, but it failed to meet where the majority of NFL studs finished during their final seasons. Geis had reasons for this though. He missed a game, but he also had a nagging knee injury throughout the season. His yards per carry actually dropped from 7.6 to 5.3 from 2016 to 2017. So we've seen him be an effective back in the past. So he's a tough one to judge based solely on his final season numbers. Kerryon Johnson actually finished fairly high in my prospect model, but I want to call him out because he had roughly 44% of Auburn's touches last year and tallied fewer than 46% of the team's yards. You generally want to see a larger gap than that. You want players to outperform their attempt share and yardage share because it's showing you that they were getting the most out of their attempts. Johnson didn't exactly get that thanks to a bottom half yards per carry average in this year's class. But when you dig a little deeper, you see that he was the most effective high volume runner on his team last year, showing that it's not just a Kerryon Johnson problem. Now, like I said, both rushing attempt and rushing production shares will correlate in some way. When we get to receiving production, everything changes. One of the big things that I've found in analyzing running back prospects is that usually good NFL running backs were pass catchers in college, even if those running backs aren't pass catchers in the NFL. Generally, successful NFL backs had high reception shares in college or percentage of catches on his team, and that's regardless if they're catching passes at the pro level. I've gotten the question before of why do you think that's the case, or why do non-pass catchers in the NFL still have decent receiving profiles in college? I think the easiest way to think about it is that college coaches are going to try and put the ball in their playmakers' hands, and a lot of times in college, you don't have a ton of professionals on the offensive side of the ball on one team. So if there's a pro running back in your offense, you're going to utilize him in every way that you can, especially because there aren't a ton of pro-level alternatives. Whereas in the NFL, there are. You're in the NFL. There are professional alternatives. This is why folks have found correlations between special teams returners and success in the NFL. It's not because those players are going to necessarily play special teams when they hit the NFL, but they're playmakers. They're good. And their coaches know that, so they put them on the punt return unit. Not only do successful backs catch the ball a lot in college, but catching the ball well is as important as ever in the NFL nowadays. I hate to keep going back to Alvin Kamara, but even with his crappy rushing profile, the dude had a good receiving profile coming out last year. He had that going for him production-wise. When you look at players in this year's class, there's one guy that has a huge pass-catching concern in my eyes, and that's Ronald Jones out of USC. Jones, to me, is one of the most volatile backs in this class. There's a lot of upside there due to his athleticism and speed, but there's some scary, scary downside. He caught just 4.21% of his team's completed passes this past year, and he averaged just a little over 12 receiving yards per game. For reference, among the successful NFL studs in this study, the average reception share was 10.9%, and the group averaged almost 21 yards per game through the air. And none of them had as low as a reception share mark as Ronald Jones. I will say though, Jones's rushing profile was so strong that he did still do pretty well within my pre-combine and pre-draft prospect model. But I'd also look at him and subjectively manually drop him a bit because I'm always really fearful of backs without a receiving profile entering the NFL. And speaking of pass catchers, I feel like I should say that I think that there are a lot of great receivers at the running back position in this class. And actually, when you look at backs drafted over the last decade, two players from this class, and Saquon Barkley and John Kelly, have top 10 final season reception shares. More on those guys in a bit. Lastly, within this study, I looked at touchdown share, or the percentage of touchdowns scored in a player's offense, both rushing and receiving. To be honest, no notable players really popped when looking at touchdown share. The one guy that I spoke about in the article that I published on NumberFire last week was Justin Jackson, who saw over 53% of Northwestern's rushes and almost 16% of the team's receptions this past season, but he scored only 23% of the team's touchdowns. Look, only is within context, of course. It's just something to note. All in all, this is a really strong class, but the only player who hit the averages that the NFL stud grouping had was Rashad Penny. When you looked at the averages of the NFL stud group, Rashad Penny hit those averages within the major market share categories. That doesn't mean that I see Penny as the best running back in this year's class. I certainly do not. And a lot of you are probably wondering how in the world Saquon Barkley didn't make the cut. And it's because he was less than a percentage point off in attempt share, only 2 percentage points off in touchdown share, and just 1 percentage point off in rushing yard share. For what it's worth, Saquon Barkley, to me, is the best running back in this year's class, and my model agrees with that. When we go a little softer on the NFL stud parameters, though, we get a group of 6 backs. Many of them may be surprising. You have Saquon Barkley, Rashad Penny, Justin Jackson, Akram Wadley, Mark Walton, and John Kelly. Some of these guys, namely Wadley, profile as pass-catching specialists in the NFL due to size. But like I said before, Justin Jackson had really strong market share numbers this past year and really throughout his years at Northwestern. His efficiency dropped a bit this past season, but he was also hurt. And then Penny had absurd market share numbers, and Saquon Barkley is a legitimate freak of nature. The two players that I want to close with here, though, are John Kelly and Mark Walton. We'll start with John Kelly. I know you guys don't want my film takes, but the first time I watched John Kelly, I honestly saw some Kareem Hunt to his game. And I'm a really big fan of his production profile, too. He had over 20% of Tennessee's receptions this past year. He was just 0.1% off of Christian McCaffrey's final season reception market share last season. And we all know what Christian McCaffrey's specialty is. He catches passes. Kelly was inefficient per carry on the ground this past season, and that's the major concern. He went from a 6.4 yards per carry average in 2016 with Jalen Hurd and Alvin Kamara to 4.1 this past year, a mark lower than freshman Ty Chandler. But in 2016, he actually had a better yards per carry rate than his running back teammates, and that includes Alvin Kamara. At the very least, I think he can be a satellite back at the NFL level, and then he has the upside if a team is willing to give him some early down work. Hopefully, he can find the right landing spot. And then there's Mark Walton. Walton only played 4 games this past year because of an ankle injury, but before the injury, he was averaging 7.6 yards per carry. And then in 2016, and these are the numbers that I looked at for Walton for purposes of the study, Walton had a pretty decent 48% attempt share, a 57% rushing yard share, so those are two numbers that are very close to the NFL stud averages that we talked about earlier, and he hit a 10.27% reception share and nearly 19 receiving yards per game. His production profile was a pretty complete one as a sophomore. He also scored 15 touchdowns that year. So if there are people out there wondering who my lower key dudes are at the running back position in this draft, who I would be focusing on during the combine, it'd probably be John Kelly, Mark Walton, and Justin Jackson. That's aside from the obvious top guys, of course, like Saquon Barkley, who's going to dominate in the NFL. Thanks to everyone for listening to today's show. I hope you were able to learn something as we get ready for this year's NFL Combine. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so by going to Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And I would really appreciate it if you went to iTunes and left a rating and review. It really goes a long way to giving back to this podcast. As always, I'm looking for mailbag questions for Friday's mailbag show. So if you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter @LateRoundQB or email me at JJ@numberfire.com. I'll talk to you then.